Non-stop talk radio, streaming 24 hours a day. TalkZone.com. TalkZone.com. Now, more discussion of the issues facing you and your financial future. The Cyber Advisor, David Revelle.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the February 5th edition of The Cyber Advisor. I'm your host, Dave Revelle, and if you'd like to join us on The Cyber Advisor, our telephone number is 888-463-6748 or email dave@thecyberadvisor.com. Well, sovereign debt is not the only debt that is being downgraded at the moment. Kind of a shock to many of us is to see Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway stripped of its AAA rating by Standard & Poor's. After the billionaire investor agreed to buy the railroad company Burlington Northern Santa Fe, Berkshire took on additional debt to fund that $26 billion takeover, and the result has been that Standard & Poor's has decided to lower their rating to AA+. The railroad acquisition will reduce what historically has been an extremely strong capital adequacy and liquidity, Standard & Poor's said. Risk tolerances appear to have increased. How interesting. Buffett, 79 years old, has called the railroad takeover an all-out wager on the U.S. economy. Berkshire lost its top rating with credit agencies Fitch and Moody's last March, but the reason for that was the potential downside of losing Warren Buffett as the CEO due to his age. The rating firms are hedging their bets in the event of another economic downturn, said Michael Yoshikama. Now, he's the chief investment strategy at Berkshire's own shareholder, YCM Net Advisors. Buffett's firm is, quote, expanding in economically sensitive businesses like railroads, he said. So very interesting. Berkshire Hathaway finally downgraded by all three agencies to AA+, no longer a AAA, and we'll have to take a look, but there are very few corporate AAA ratings left in the United States now, and that alone is a kind of an interesting comment on just how deep and how profound this economic downturn has been. Well, one of the rumors that has been rampaging through Wall Street for this week has been the apparent adjustment by the BLS, that's the Bureau of Labor Statistics, on how they compute the unemployment rate. In accordance with its usual practice, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics is announcing a preliminary estimate of the upcoming annual benchmark revisions to the employment survey series. The benchmark revisions happen every year at this time, but this one is rumored to be an unbelievable adjustment of 824,000 jobs on the downside, jobs that are lost. That's a 0.6% increase in the unemployment rate, and we will watch this carefully, but clearly that would have meant that back when we would have been rather substantially over 10% on the unemployment rate. One of the other big fronts that is happening on Wall Street and that all of the street certainly is looking at closely is the proposal by Paul Volcker. Now, Paul Volcker is the former head of the Federal Reserve Bank. He was head of the Federal Reserve Bank during the time that Ronald Reagan was president in the early 80s. And Volcker has essentially said it's time to roll back the clock and reestablish what he calls the Volcker Rule, but what some of us are calling Glass-Steagall Part 2. Now, Glass-Steagall, you may know, was the separation of a commercial bank versus an investment bank. Commercial banks gained the insurance of the FDIC and the backing of the Fed and the Treasury, whereas investment banks, which took risks in their trading and proprietary accounts, did not have those protections. Now, will it happen or won't it? That's the big speculation on the street. The battle lines are currently drawn on the one side, the big banks with their lobbyists and so on, but on the other side, major governments and international institutions with their huge powers to enact the law are on the other. Now, PRinsider.com puts their money on the side of the government. They think that the reintroduction of Glass-Steagall will happen, but that it will not be easy or simple. And at least one Wall Street firm, Citicorp, is already reacting to the possibility of the Volcker Rule. Citi is already planning to sell its hedge fund and private equity business, getting out of that before the rule comes in. Well, recently, Paul Volcker was invited up to the Capitol, where he made some introductory remarks as he introduced exactly what the Volcker Rule does mean. He introduced that to the Congress, and here is Paul Volcker in his own words. Glass-Steagall would not be the first major reformation that we've had, the reforming of the financial systems. You may recall back in the 1990s, Sarbanes-Oxley was a major proposal that we had, a major change in the accounting rules and so on, that has added substantially to the regulatory requirements for new capital in the United States. What's interesting is Sarbanes-Oxley, according to many on the on Wall Street, had the direct effect of moving much of the business that Wall Street would have done offshore and onto London's shore particularly. And recently we were able to listen to an interview of Boris Johnson. Mr. Johnson is the mayor of London, and now he's faced with a similar situation as the reform ball kind of rolls around the globe. He was recently asked whether or not he thought that some of the reform measures out there were wise or not wise, and he presents a very different perspective on that and delineates exactly how important to his city the Fleet Street, the financial sector, is, how much money they contribute, and exactly what their role is in London. And here is Boris Johnson, mayor of London.
People think that the bonuses that they've come up with are pretty crazy, given the conditions the economy is in, condition that people in the street. And I'd like to see a sense of responsibility and restraint. I'd like to see them, you know, giving away their bonuses or holding them back or using them for to build up their capital base or whatever. But that doesn't mean I'm not in favour of preserving London's lead as the world's preeminent financial centre. And what I don't want to do is to have some unilateral measures that disadvantage London. And I'm all on for regulatory framework that is agreed internationally. And, you know, we can look at that. But what I don't think we should be doing is individually shooting ourselves in the foot as an act of sort of domestic political machismo and self-mutilation.
One of the interesting things in contrasting Boris Johnson and Paul Volcker in their assessment of exactly the importance of the financial institutions is that the model that Paul Volcker goes back, the pre-1980 model of a U.S. commercial bank, is very foreign and has always been rather foreign to the Europeans. The Europeans have always had a combination of what we call a commercial bank and a investment bank, and rolled up into one big bank that they call a merchant bank. And they're very comfortable with the concept of a merchant bank having both deposits from investors, but also having proprietary trading desks. And it's interesting that through TARP and through some of the other things that we enacted to stave off the financial difficulties that we've had lately, we really kind of created the European model of a merchant bank. Goldman Sachs, a very good example of that, as Goldman Sachs took advantage of some of the provisions to become, at least for a short time, a commercial bank and thereby get the protection of the Fed. So here one more time is Boris Johnson speaking from London and indicating the importance of not going overboard on regulation for the City of London. Boris Johnson once more.
Well, yeah, and everybody will make arguments about cutting off your nose to spite your face and throwing the baby out with the bathwater and killing the goose who lays the golden eggs, and, you know, choose your old English metaphor, and that's absolutely right. And as I never tire of saying, the hedge funds and the private equity barons, the guys that are, you know, actually weren't really implicated in the recent disaster, but who are now worried about the tax rates moving, we're told, to Zurich and Zug and what have you. Don't forget, people in London, politicians who attack these people as being overpaid predators and all the rest of it, they contribute in tax enough to pay for 200,000 nurses, 165,000 teachers, or the entire Olympic budget. That's just private equity and venture capital in London. Now, where else, I ask you, I ask my fellow politicians, are we going to get that kind of tax revenue? And, you know, the world is always going to need people who are good at mental arithmetic, plausible, charming, and who can allocate capital efficiently. And it so happens that London is particularly good at producing them. We have a very large share of the world financial services industry. We always are, I hope, going to have a very large share of that industry. And my job is to stick up for it.
Well, finally, everybody, we'd like to look forward to the economic calendar in the week ahead, where there are two major things to catch your eye as you look as we look forward. On Tuesday, the Treasury will announce their budget deficit. It's anticipated to be about a $60 billion deficit for the month of January. And also a very big thing to look at early Wednesday morning will be the retail sales for January. Expectations are for a very slight 0.4% gain, but expect whatever that number is to have a rather profound effect on Wall Street, which is looking a little anemic right at the moment. Well, that's it for this week. We'd like to thank Dave Olson, our producer, and all the folks behind the scenes at TalkZone.com. Bye-bye for now. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.